This is Agriculture Today.
Farm financial stress continued to deepen in 2025 as Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies climbed for a second consecutive year, signaling mounting strain across much of U.S. ag. Court records show 315 Chapter 12 filings during the year. That's a 46% year-over-year increase and the highest level since the pandemic-era surge. Losses across major crop and even livestock sectors drove the increase, according to a new report from the American Farm Bureau Federation. The Midwest and Southeast accounted for more than two-thirds of the filings, reflecting prolonged declines in farm receipts combined with persistently high input costs. Arkansas leading the nation with 33 filings, followed by sharp increases in Georgia, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, where margins in row crops, dairy, and even livestock narrowed simultaneously. Rising reliance on credit has compounded the problem. Larger operating loans, longer repayment terms, and interest expenses projected to reach record levels in 2026 have left many operations with very little room to absorb another poor year. USDA projects total farm debt climbing to a new high, underscoring the growing dependence on borrowed capital just to stay operational. Chapter 12 relief remains unavailable, though, to many family farms, particularly those relying on off-farm income, which leaves closures as the only option for some producers. U.S. grain export inspections remained solid during the week that ended February 5th. Corn, soybeans, wheat, all posting volumes ahead of last year, and sorghum shipments stayed active with China in the mix. Latest USDA market news data shows continued export movement supporting demand across key commodities. Corn inspections, 51.5 million bushels up from the prior week, well above the same period last year. Marketing year-to-date corn inspections near 1.34 billion bushels, sharply ahead of last year's pace. Shipments going to Mexico, Japan, and other destinations. For beans, 41.7 million bushels for the week, slightly below last week, but cumulative soybean inspections holding near 850 million bushels for the marketing year. China remains a notable buyer, accounting for a significant share of soybean loadings through both the Gulf and Pacific Northwest ports. Wheat inspections, 21.3 million bushels. Sorghum at 4.9 million bushels. Ocean freight rates averaging lower in 2025, but the year underscored just how quickly transportation risk can return for grain exporters. Short-term disruptions, global demand shifts reportedly pushing rates higher despite favorable annual averages. Early year rate declines driven by seasonal slowdowns, ample vessel supply, and weaker dry bulk demand. Those conditions reversed at times as global commodity flows increased, tightening vessel availability, lifting freight cost. Late summer, fall disruptions, well, they highlighted lingering vulnerability in global logistics, and low water levels on Argentina's river reduced vessel loading capacity. Pre-holiday shipping demand in Asia also tightened coverage and raised rates for U.S. grain movements. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Let's talk trade. The White House recently concluded new trade deals with two Central American nations, agreements both hailed by NPPC. El Salvador and Guatemala, which were part of the 2004 U.S.-Dominican Republic Central America Free Trade Agreement, signed their respective reciprocal trade agreements with the U.S. in late January after negotiating a framework deal last November. Both countries agreed that any sanitary, phytosanitary measures must be science and risk-based, and if they result in trade restrictions, must be removed. Furthermore, they cannot adopt or maintain SPS measures that are incompatible with U.S. or international standards. Specific to U.S. pork exports, both countries must recognize U.S. food safety requirements as satisfying their domestic requirements, accept USDA's official list of U.S. establishments eligible to export pork and pork products to their markets. Both countries must not impose additional facility registration requirements on U.S. meat processors and accept USDA's export certificate of wholesomeness, including digitally signed forms, and not require a separate certificate of free sale. NPPC, of course, supports enhancing market access for U.S. pork to El Salvador and Guatemala, as the U.S. pork industry is highly dependent on exports, which in 2024 topped $8.6 billion and equated to an average of more than $66 in value from each hog marketed. Keeping the trade topic going, the U.S. and India finalized a trade agreement that will see them lower tariffs on each other's exports, and India will buy more U.S. products, including agricultural goods. The U.S. will cut its reciprocal tariff rate on Indian goods from 25% to 18% in exchange for the Asian nation cutting its tariff to zero and also reducing non-tariff barriers on American exports. It also will eliminate a separate 25% duty on India in exchange for the country foregoing further purchases of Russian oil. NPPC, as I mentioned, of course, supports the trade deal with India, which will strengthen U.S. agricultural market access and reduce and eventually eliminate tariff and non-tariff barriers to American goods. The agreement also will ensure India adopts science-based technical, sanitary, and phytosanitary standards. In other news on the update, USDA employees are packing up their vans starting this summer. USDA is moving forward with reorganizing the agency, including relocating personnel to five regional hubs around the country beginning this summer. That's according to USDA Deputy Secretary Stephen Vaden. Talking about the reorganization during a recent event at the National Agricultural Law Center in Arkansas, Vaden said, when you combine shrinking budgets, the increasing cost of living in Washington, D.C., and the needs of a department that's focused not on urban America but rural America, it makes the most sense to get the largest number of our employees to places where they can have the quality of life that they deserve on a government salary. He said USDA employees will be in places that are actually closer to the communities they're charged with serving. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins announced the reorganization almost a year ago, and the department took public comments on it last summer. According to agriculture industry sources, the majority of the 14,000-plus comments were against moving USDA employees out of the Washington, D.C. area. Chad Smith, Washington.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, not all rumors are true, right? But there's probably a shred of truth in each.
Matt Makins is a meteorologist with Cattle Facts at the annual Outlook Seminar at CattleCon 26.
I've already been caught by, I don't know, three, four, five of you already about, we heard El Nino is coming. Well, there is a shred of truth in that. And likely the roadmap for the year is leaving La Nina behind and head toward El Nino. We did this in 2023. I stood on, not this stage, but wherever we were that year, and said, we've got an El Nino coming. It was brief, but we're likely looking at that kind of scenario again for this year. Okay, so 2023 is a pretty prime analog year, if you will. So currently, La Nina is fading. It's leaving us. That does not mean this winter impact is over. Over the next 2 weeks, you will see the weather pattern across the country in North America. It will flip. We're going to warm up Tennessee. We're going to thaw out this ice. Meanwhile, we're going to send the cold toward the west. And we may finally get some precip, some snowfall falling on those Rocky Mountains. Right now, Colorado has the historically lowest snowpack on record. It's historically hot. We need to reverse this pattern, spread the moisture out. And luckily, if we transition through the year from La Nina to El Nino, we're going to do just that. Not just in the short term, but throughout the long term, we're going to spread this water, spread the wealth around. Recall with me that when we talk about El Nino, you hear about it from NOAA, you hear about it from somebody else, they're telling you El Nino is what? Or La Nina is what? It is an ocean temperature. Very little to do with weather at this point. Any forecast you see about El Nino or La Nina, that's an ocean temperature. In the bathtub. I highlighted the bathtub for you there. We care about all that ocean area, but we focus on the deepest blues. For the last several months, we've been in a weak La Nina. We did the same thing last year. That's driven our dry climate that we've had overall over the last several months. And recall, why does the weather person always bring up this El Nino or La Nina thing? Because other than just the normal seasonal change, it is the driver. It is in the driver's seat. It drives the weather, climate, pattern, whatever you want to call it, globally, every single time it's established. It's doing the same thing in South America, the same thing in Australia, and it drives the impact here. We can look at a roadmap of this, and you can see it on the screen. If you have El Nino, that's the precip pattern on the left. The greens grab our attention because we always know that's precip. If you have La Nina, that's the far right. That's when the ocean is cooler than average. The global impact is that we dry out across North America, especially the southern states. And we have certainly seen that this year. So as we go through this transition, you can look at the gauge on the screen. We may look at that ocean and say, it's very, very cold. That would be a strong La Nina. What does that do to us? It spreads a tremendous amount of drought from Mexico into the southern U.S. It keeps water across the northwest, keeps water at times in the central Mississippi and the Ohio Valley. If you start to dial this La Nina down, which is where we have been, it's on the screen. That's where the drought should be or is classically. Very little water across the northern plains when we hit these weak La Ninas. And what have we seen recently? We've seen some Pacific moisture, but it's drier than average. We've seen drier than average conditions with exceptional drought categories across Oklahoma, Texas, the central Mississippi, down across the southeast. This is where we're about to head. We're going to start to shrink down this drought area. And as we take this dial and we try to lean it toward El Nino, look at our precip pattern flip across the country. Once we hit this, if you've been dry, you start to get wet. If you've been wet, you start to get dry. That's the basis of this transition. What you have got to watch throughout the course of this year will be the strength of this event. A very strong El Nino brings something very different than a weak one, and we'll refine those details as we go forward throughout the course of the year.
It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever, because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
It's our responsibility, and President Trump, when he nominated me for this capacity, put in the actual post nominating me that we were going to go out and get smart trade deals for farmers and ranchers. And that's what we're doing.
Luke Lindberg is Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs at USDA.
The president has embarked upon a historic change of course with respect to international trade, and is out there opening up new markets each and every day all around the world. And as we begin to see those new markets open up, which we've had a lot of recently, USDA plays a critical role in helping make sure that our farmers actually get real sales done in those markets where we have new access. So I have to say the president opens the door for us here, and it's our drive to help job to help the farmer drive the bus through it.
He talks about a plan that he and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins came up with.
America has always benefited from a agricultural trade surplus. We export more agricultural products than we import most years. Historically, that's been the case. And unfortunately, when President Trump took office this time last year, we were facing a $50 billion trade deficit in agricultural goods. So Secretary Rollins and I knew that working alongside the president, it was our job to get us back to a place where America is once again feeding the world. And as we embarked upon that journey, we released a three-point plan in the fall of last year to help bolster our agricultural exports. And one of the aspects of that three-point plan is the America First Trade Promotion Program, which puts $285 million into the marketplace for agricultural cooperator groups, the associations that represent our farmers and ranchers and help them promote their products. To get out there and create new sales. Now, we also began a new type of rapid response trade mission that we're calling Trump missions, trade reciprocity for U.S. manufacturers and producers in markets where the president has created new access opportunities for our farmers and ranchers. And the last point of that three-point plan is that we are in the process of revitalizing one of our key export credit programs that really allows foreign buyers the chance to buy American if they want to, using some government support financing on exports. So we're in the process of doing all three of those activities right now to make sure we can put the trade deficit back into a surplus.
A recent announcement by USDA changing the GSM 102 credit guarantee program. What is it? What happens?
So Congress authorizes $5.5 billion of lending authority to the GSM 102 program, essentially allowing us to support up to $5.5 billion of American agricultural exports to different markets around the world. Unfortunately, the program hasn't really been updated recently in a way that makes it materially beneficial and usable in much of the world. About 95% of that credit right now goes to projects in the sort of Western Hemisphere, Latin America region. And we're looking at ways to bolster opportunities across East Asia, Africa, other places where we know there are growing populations of folks. So I was in Indonesia last week, and we announced the first step we're taking to revitalize that program by allowing a new type of repayment option that will hopefully allow us to increase our overall sales to the Indonesia and Southeast Asia region.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
When we think about the fundamentals for corn over the course of the next, you know, call it 18 months.
Troy Bockelman is with Cattle Facts at the annual Outlook Seminar at CattleCon 26.
We're going to start 26 and 27. We're going to have ending stocks above 2 billion bushels, right around 2.2 billion bushels. Even with smaller corn acres, 95.8, maybe they're even as down as 95, trend line yield, you do lose about 800 to 900 million bushels of production, but you're going to grow ending stocks. We would expect to see demand exports relatively stable. Once the Mexican border opens up, we're going to ship less corn to Mexico. They're going to ship us more cattle. Ethanol, stable, adequate margins there to produce. The feed and residual, the declining cattle supplies, the stable to slightly higher hogs and poultry. Demand is going to continue to stay strong, but we would expect to see stocks to use, you know, grow in the next marketing year. Because we bring the carryover with us, the ending stocks with us, and some readjustment to that feed and residual, that you're talking about the corn market with a 15% stocks to use. When you look back historically at corn price, you tend to have some event that makes the corn market rally. And then once the market rallies, you build supplies and the market tends to find more of a range. You can see that in this chart from 2015 to 2020. Then in 2020, you had African swine fever in China. We exported an additional 800 million bushels as they quit feeding food waste. Then you had some drought. You tightened the stocks to use. The market rallied. You build production. And over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, I would expect more of a practical range in corn. You want to use more of like a $4 to $5 corn market, unless you have an event that's going to change the stocks to use position. Drought somewhere else that causes exports to grow, African swine fever, those types of things. I think the bottom is in corn. In 2024, we made a low in spot corn futures at 365. 2025, we made a low at right around 385. So as we go into 2026 and into 2027, I wouldn't be very bullish above $5 a bushel, but I also wouldn't be very bearish below $4 a bushel. On the soybean side, soybean acres, they lost to corn. They were down a little over 6 million bushels, sitting here at about 82 million bushels. We would expect rotational to see a few more acres. Yield, record high again, 53 bushels per acre. Little fun fact, the last time we had a record yield was in 2016. So it's been 10 years before we built the new record. So I would look at the 2026 crop and say, you know, 53, 54 is probably a pretty good yield. If we start to see the drought move into Iowa, maybe it's closer to a 52, but you have a little bit more additional acres. The challenge with soybeans has been exports. You did have a deal done with China that China was going to come in and buy 440 million bushels of soybeans for the current marketing year. And then they were going to increase to 900 million bushels in the following market year. And so you've started to build the stocks to use on soybeans, even with record high crush, that the soybean market has felt that weight of lack of export demand. Is China going to buy 900 million bushels next year? That's still to be determined, but we're looking at where we look at the global picture. I wouldn't expect to see a big increase in soybean exports.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As the 2025 annual report makes clear, economic growth is essential for financial stability. In a growing economy with rising incomes, debt burdens fall, American standards of living rise, and the financial system remains stable.
At a recent House Financial Services Committee hearing, the chairman from Arkansas, French Hill.
It's encouraging to have financial regulators and policymakers who understand this fundamental reality and aim to foster a regulatory environment that considers how both new and existing regulations alter and impact economic growth. Committee Republicans share the commitment to promoting economic growth through the elimination of unnecessary regulatory burdens, a hallmark of the Trump administration. Since assuming the presidency just over a year ago, President Trump has built on this critical work that he achieved in his first administration to make further progress in rolling back overly burdensome regulations that stifle innovation in our economic growth. These efforts go beyond reducing just regulatory red tape. They're about fostering an environment where financial institutions can thrive and contribute to the stability and growth of our economy. In late 2024, Moody's Analytics anticipated that a Republican-controlled government would bring 3.5% inflation, 5% unemployment, a recession, and a budget deficit of 6% of GDP. Since then, Democrats have repeatedly and wrongfully accused Republicans of, quote, tanking the economy, close quote. With most of the official data in the books, these warnings missed the mark.
Texas Representative Pete Sessions with Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
I would suggest to you that Treasury probably has a philosophy about the role of the American dollar in the world economy, the stability that we have, the use of wanting to make sure that the dollar remains that dominant use. But I would tell you that I will be very interested if you have a working group on this of us making ourselves aware, because it is an issue to people who simply see social media.
We look forward to working with you on that, Congressman.
Thank you, Secretary. Mr. Secretary, as you have alluded to, and as the discussion here has been about banks, community banks, the ability that they have, you recognize, because you spoke directly to it, about the stress that they are placed under as opposed to bigger banks. Could you please talk to us about what you believe the role is of home ownership, which is increasingly a part of the political discussion and debate and discussions for members of Congress back home, of solving our home ownership problem. And you've got almost a minute. Boy, I'm giving you a lot of time. And interest rates as they correspond to people being able to buy their own homes.
Good. Well, thank you. And I would note that I was also a banks and financial institutions analyst for 35 years and was instrumental in working with the government to bring down American Continental and SunState Savings and Loans, which were the direct beneficiaries of the Keating Five. That getting small banks lending again, we need to get them back into the mortgage market. No one knows their communities like small banks. And having moved into the larger system, the strength and breadth of the U.S. mortgage market is choice. And we have lost the choice in the small banks. And I think we need to get them back into the housing lending business. And we are seeing, it's a tragedy, that the average first-time home buyer is now 40 years old. 40 years old.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.